Okay, thank you. Thanks to the A8 committee that invited me, and specifically to Ron Sorensen, who specifically identified me. I'd also like to recognize Jane Johnson, who is out in the audience, as an inspiration over the last couple of years as a co-author on this talk. All right, crop residues, a resource for whom? So the topic of my talk is about the last part of Ken's talk about using cellulosic ethanol production and what it means to various people in the world. Crop residues, it's a renewable natural resource. It has a long history of utilization in agriculture and society in general. It's valued in different ways. Sometimes it's valued as it's considered a waste, and sometimes, a lot of times, it's a valuable resource. But how we use it on a large scale could have major implications for agricultural sustainability. And most of you could sense that being in the American Society of Agronomy. Well, there are a lot of competing uses for crop residues in the world, and certainly in the United States we're a little bit different than most parts of the world, but actually there in the world there are a lot of competing uses for construction. You know, even the there it is. Okay. This is a picture here in England, developed country, but they use crop residues as a roofing material. And certainly in Africa it's used in various construction projects. It's used as for arts and crafts, so you know it gives beauty to our life, and certainly we have a lot of people that use it, and it's a very functional part of our life. Unfortunately, it's used for heating and cooking in a lot of places, and this is a serious problem for the health of the women, particularly that use crop residues as a heating fuel, but because of the bad air pollution that occurs in the houses that they're using it in, and certainly there are ways that we could improve that, but. In developing countries, crop residues are a major source of heating source. So it is a very important part of our life. And now we've come to the age, you know, in the latter part of the 20th century, the 70s started it, and we're using it as an industrialized way of biofuel production. It's traditionally been used as bedding for animals. Wheat straw, sometimes corn, but a lot of times wheat straw, small grain straw, is used as bedding material, and it's a very important part of agriculture. And it's also been used as animal feed. Certainly corn stubble left in the field is an acceptable forage for a lot of animals, and it provides a good winter foraging ground. The picture on the right, the country gentleman, I believe that was taken in 1923, it says. So it's some part of our agricultural history. But the one thing that I really want to focus the talk on really is about the soil. And I'm going to give you an example. We as soil scientists certainly recognize that it's very important, and it protects the soil. It's important for a lot of functions, and we know that it's very important for controlling soil loss. The more crop residues that we have, the less soil loss we have. If we start removing more of that ground cover, certainly we're going to have a lot more soil loss. It's important for wind erosion. Certainly that feeds the biology of the soil. And oftentimes we get these major gullies that occur, and they become historical. Now I come from the state of Georgia, and we have Providence Canyon in the southern part of the state, and it's a magnificent place to visit. But it all started from excessive soil erosion, and it just washed out, and it washed down to the marine sediments that were down there. So it's a pretty sight, but it's a ecological disaster in a lot of ways. Well, I'm going to bring you to the state of my children, and my daughter can recite this book, The Lorax, by heart. I wish she were here, but she isn't. But there I'm just going to bring up an example. I state here that there are simple similarities between crop residue utilization and the book, The Lorax, by Dr. Seuss. Well, the book goes kind of like this. It's got the text there. It says, "Mister, this is the guy here is the Lorax. He's standing on a stump that which." This guy over here, Jane, who's that guy? The Onceler who cut down these trees. It says, "Mister," he said with a sawdusty sneeze, "I am the Lorax. I speak for the trees. I speak for the trees, for the trees have no tongues, and I'm asking you, sir, at the top of my lungs." He was very upset as he shouted and puffed, "What's that thing you've made out of my truffle a tuft?" Well, if we If we get the inspiration from Dr. Johnson there, that she's the Lorax, and we're harvesting all this crop residue out there, you can just substitute soil for the trees there. And it's the crop residue as the surface cover. The soil needs that surface cover. There's no doubt about it. All of our natural system have surface cover. It's very important, and it controls a lot of soil functions. So the story goes on. It says, "Look, Lorax," I said, "there's no cause for alarm. I chopped just one tree. I'm doing no harm. I'm being quite useful. This thing is a thneed. A thneed, I find something that all people need. It's a shirt. It's a sock. It's a glove. It's a hat. But here it has other uses. Yes, far beyond that. You can use it for carpets, for pillows, for sheets, or curtains, or covers, for bicycle seats." The Lorax said, "Sir, you are crazy with greed. There is no one on earth who would buy that fool thneed." Well, crop residues have a lot of competing uses, right? I've explained those, and certainly the Lorax found that out too. Well, but the very next minute, I proved he was wrong, for just at that minute, a check came along, and he thought that the thneed I had knitted was great. He happily bought it for $3.98. I laughed at the Lorax, "You poor, stupid guy. You never can tell what some people will buy." Well, you know, the story went on, and certainly all the trees were cut down because of the economic opportunities that the needs gave him. And this photo shows, you know, an unprotected soil surface and certainly what happens. I think the important part is that we need to always have balance. And that's the balance that we have to realize up front. If we realize it up front, maybe we can avoid disasters. So they could be out there. Hopefully we don't have any more soil erosion than we have, because it's still too much in the world. Well, that was an example, but there are also examples actually out there that occur. And certainly in West Africa, some portions of the semi-arid part of West Africa, it's happening just as that story occurred. We have a vicious cycle of desertification because of the large crop removals of nutrients, and there are very few nutrients put back into the soil. And so when the soil is denuded, the soils are sandy. They should have water that infiltrate, but when the large rains come, the soil just washes away, and so there's very little life left in the soil. I'm going to take you through several examples from the literature, just pulled from the literature, and show you that on a precision agriculture basis, there are a lot of opportunities to get different responses. Ken mentioned also a lot of different responses that are out there, and certainly there are. We need to know more. We need to know a lot more. If we look at the fraction of rainfall as runoff, it can be very low if we don't harvest residues. But if we start harvesting a lot of those residues, you can see that more of the rainfall is being lost as runoff. So this is not a linear relationship. It happens to be taken from two different studies, one in Minnesota and one in Nigeria. But, you know, in general, it follows a nice curvilinear relationship. So if we start taking about 50% of the residues, we're not doing too bad, right? So that's on average. That's maybe a good rule of thumb. But I think there are a lot of problems that can occur. And certainly if we look at the soil loss from water erosion from the same two studies, if we take the Nigeria example, we can harvest up to about 85% of the residues and get to the threshold limit of 2.5 megagrams of hectare per year of soil loss. Well, if we look at some of those other studies, one in Minnesota on the silty clay loam soil, it goes down to 65%. And if you go to another, the loam soil, it was down to 40%. So we get a diversity of responses that could be out there. This is a study done by Dr. Larson in Iowa. These are the details down here. It's an 11-year study. This was on moldboard plowed land, but it was a classical study, and a lot of information comes from this study. In that it showed that there was this response to crop residue addition, and soil organic carbon increased. More soil organic carbon is good. Less is bad, because our organisms don't function, because they require this organic carbon. Infiltration is reduced. A lot of things that happen there. So more is better. It shows there's this if we convert that organic carbon from concentration to megagrams per hectare, these are the same data basically. It shows that this breakpoint here, where the initial soil organic carbon level is met with organic carbon inputs, it requires 2 megagrams of carbon per hectare per year to maintain soil organic carbon, or in this case 5 megagrams of residue per hectare per year. And so that figure is used a lot in current calculations. It's from alfalfa or corn, so it's used well. And I also wanted to point out this number here. 20% of the carbon input is retained as organic carbon from this linear relationship here. And so that's a value, which is I'm going to show is rather quite a high level. And so even though that some calculations show that we should be harvesting 5 megagrams per hectare per year, and it depends on the amount of residue that's produced, whether you can have 50% or not, but 5 megagrams is the target that a lot of studies are looking for. Well, another study by Dr. Black in 1973 in North Dakota, total nitrogen initially was this distribution. It tends to be high at the surface and decreasing with depth. If you after 8 years of evaluation, you have no residue, it slightly decreases. Now, this is a mollisol, so it didn't decrease much. And if you maintain the normal practice of 1.7 megagrams of hectare per hectare per year of residue, it basically kept the initial value because this was in a steady state. But if you start adding more and more residue, we're increasing soil organic carbon. So certainly more residue will improve the soil properties. So if they harvested residue, reduced soil nitrogen by 4 kilograms per hectare per year, and additional residues increase soil nitrogen 9 to 19 kilograms per hectare per year. All right, if we look at an assemblage of studies, this happens to be from 29 observations. The data were calculated from 15 studies, a variety of environmental conditions. The study by Larson et al. 1972 showed a fraction of above ground carbon input sequestered as soil organic carbon. That was at 0.2. Well, only about 20% of those studies met that criteria, and 80% of the studies didn't even meet that criteria. So that was a high target. Now, if we look at the probability of getting half of the responses, we're only looking at 8% of the carbon input that is needed to sequester additional organic carbon. So there are a variety of responses, and certainly our environments are going to play a role. Different soil types are going to play a role, and so we need a whole lot more research to clearly identify what their responses will be. If we look at some other functions, so soil temperature and water response to crop residue harvest, this is a study out of Nebraska. Soil water storage was highest with the least amount of crop residue harvest, and then it declined once residues were harvested. This was during the third to sixth years of that study. Again, the same kind of a response. It decreased with increasing crop residue harvest. And if we look at the maximum soil temperature, this is important in semi-arid areas and in very warm areas where the maximum temperature at the surface can be upwards of 50 degrees Celsius or not. This has important implications on early seedling development. If you can have more residue, you can reduce that temperature quite a bit. If we look at a diversity of responses in Ohio, Dr. Lau and his colleagues have been looking at this study here, where we have soil strength measurements in different soils. And the extent of crop residue harvest is plotted on the x-axis. We have three different soils, and we get essentially three different responses to soil strength. Now, those were fairly similar. To control wind erosion, Dr. Molly in Saskatchewan and Alberta looked at many different soils, and there were a lot of no differences between straw removed and straw retained. These were all fairly good lengths of studies, anywhere from 4 to 9 years. And on average, yes, straw removal did increase the amount of wind erodible aggregates compared to straw retained. And so, in general, yes, there are good benefits to retaining straw, but there are a lot of diversity of responses too. Now, and anyone that's done research, and all of you have, know that there are going to be different responses just based on experimental conditions. All right, if we look at the study back in Ohio again, at water infiltration, here the study looked at extent of crop residue harvest. If we remove crop residues, infiltration goes down dramatically in this silt loam. If you look at a clay loam soil, it didn't go down much, did it? There was very little response to crop residue harvest. And if you take another silt loam, there was a different response. So these are all in Ohio. It happens to be a fairly short-term study, but I believe the study is still going on. It's 2.5 years of study. And it showed different responses to different soil types, all in the same state. So, you know, there are the various differences. If we look at some of the biological responses, earthworms, generally, The more residues that are removed, the lower the values. There were no differences here in the study in Finland. There were some differences here in New Zealand. And here there was a difference in Wisconsin. If we look at microbial biomass carbon, certainly there's an increase with keeping residues on. Feeding the microbial life with residues is very important. There are different responses, absolute differences. And fungi, there were also differences in a study in New Zealand. If we look at the number of earthworm middens in the study by Ratan Lal in Ohio, this was after 1 year of study, and it's amazing what the responses were at 1 year. I'm really quite shocked myself what kind of responses they got. But you see in the silt loam, it declined quite rapidly. In the clay loam, it decreased even more so, and that was a different response than that occurred for water infiltration. And the other silt loam, there was another response. So there are various responses. So if you take the point at 50% reduction in earthworm middens, so let's say that we can allow some reduction in functional capability, then obviously but there's the different threshold. Sometimes it's 35%, sometimes it's going to be 70%, maybe it's 80%. So we need to know what that threshold level is. So if we summarize some of the soil responses to crop residue harvest, we're certainly going to have reduced water infiltration, and particularly with greater than 50% removal. So if we can keep our removal rates at 50% or less, then probably we're going to be able to protect the soil sufficiently. But again, probably is not necessarily a good enough answer. I mean, we need to have some research to show this, and so we definitely need to encourage greater research on that. Increased soil erosion is likely to occur, especially with greater than 50% removal. We're going to also have reduced soil organic carbon and nitrogen storage. And soil organic matter is very key to a lot of the other responses that occur in soil. And so that's a key component that we need to focus on. And it's fortunate that it's also a key component that's another hot issue of global change and of carbon sequestration in soil. So it fits both roles there. Okay, we're also likely going to have reduced water storage and increased surface soil temperature with crop residue harvest and increased soil strength. Reduced soil aggregation is likely to occur and reduced soil biological activity. So in general, the responses the literature suggests that yes, the responses are going to be that we're going to have a negative response to crop residue harvest. But I think the key important part is let's define what those threshold levels will be in different areas, and that's where we need to work towards in the future. And to not leave you on a sour note, I think there are a lot of options. Ken mentioned about his ecological intensification. There are a lot of options, and we need to conduct agriculture in a different way in the future if we're going to try to use this in a different manner. There are options. One is sod-based crop rotations. We need to get more grass into our systems. Agriculture needs grass. It was agriculture in the United States was built on grass. We need more of it in our cropping systems as well. If we look at a system where 4 years of conventional tillage in my research station in Watkinsville, we get generally a low organic carbon level, and it's evenly distributed in soil, 1% organic carbon. If we can use conservation tillage, certainly we can increase it at the surface. A lot of times we decrease it with depth, but that is often balanced with this higher level. Now, the bulk density is oftentimes lower here, so it's not necessarily a whole lot of increase, but that organic matter at the surface is extremely important. And if we can include grasses in that, in this case a 15-year tall fescue pasture, we can increase the organic matter at the surface a whole lot more. And so it's an example that we do need to explore sod-based crop rotations. It's an excellent opportunity. It may not be economically viable at this point, but what we got to make it viable. We got to devise systems to make it viable. If we look at we got a lot of animal production in the world, and there's likely going to be more. We need to use that manure because it's an excellent source of organic carbon for our soils. If we just look at the global trend of what it means in different regions, cold regions typically are going to be able to sequester more of that organic carbon from manure because it's cold. The microbes aren't decomposing it. So we can have three times higher sequestration rate in cold regions versus warm regions. If we look at moist versus dry regions, there isn't necessarily a whole lot of difference. So we have some opportunities, certainly in dry regions, to utilize more moisture. All right. Utilization of biofuel and industrial byproducts as soil amendments. Well, Jane Johnson, she's done some work on this in a short-term study. You can see that the amount of lignin from the ethanol byproduct that's out there is greatly increased, and that's a key component to getting more of that carbon from that amendment into the soil. So if you look at the soil microbial biomass response to this fermentation byproduct addition, it's increasing with increasing amount of addition. And so there's a lot of research that needs to be done on just organic additions, whether it's from biofuels or from industrial products. And if you look at water-stable aggregation, also a good increase with that. We need to have more regionally adapted conservation agriculture systems. And here I basically think that we need to have more integration of crops and livestock. Certainly our livestock and crops are desegregated, or they are segregated, and we need to have a little bit more integration, because there's a great opportunity to introduce grasses into the system and then get economic production at the same time. And so with in a pasture, if we grazed a no-till situation, we're seeing no difference in Watkinsville of differences in organic carbon. There's no difference whether it's grazed or ungrazed. Grazing animals are typically viewed as a negative thing, but we can maximize their benefit if we conserve it well. We don't have to overgraze in all situations. It's not the way to go. We need to balance grazing with production. And we also need to think about our landscapes and getting more grasses and trees in the right areas. And certainly the NRCS has promoted that a lot with riparian buffers. And there are good opportunities to include biofuels in our landscapes as well. But it doesn't have to be over the whole landscape. It can be in certain parts of the landscape. So in conclusion, there's certainly a great need to carefully assess the impacts of crop residue harvest, and certainly for the environment. As I've portrayed Jane Johnson being out there, she's speaking for the soil. And the soil doesn't have its voice out there, because it's not that economic impact that crop residues, if we use it for biofuels, it's an economic impact. Well, the soil is belongs to all of us, and we need to protect it. We're certainly going to have a diversity of environmental responses, and especially if we go into this in a full-scale, large manner. And if crop residues must be harvested for biofuel production, then innovative management practices certainly are out there, and we need to explore those options a whole lot more for sustainable agricultural production. Thank you.